Welcome to The Connection, a podcast to connect you to the parish of Yate.
My name's Howell.
And I'm Justin.
We are your hosts, sharing with you a series of spiritual tools to enable everyday Christian living in the parish of Yate. So in this episode, we ask, what's the story of the Bible?
We look at Bible stories and how all they link together.
And we ask how the Christmas story is linked to Hannah.
And how we are part of the story today. So in this week's episode, we're going to talk about the story of the Bible.
Yeah, that's right, because we're going to look at what the overall story is of the Bible. So I know we talked about it being different books like a library.
Yeah.
But there is a story that runs all the way through, like a kind of grand narrative, a grand story that runs all the way through the Bible.
So let's recap. So we've talked about the Old Testament and what that means and where that's come from and the symbolism and the text that's come from it. And then we've then talked about the second part of the Bible, which of course is the New Testament, which is our second episode in this line. So what brings them together? What is this story?
The story that brings them together is the same one that runs all the way through the Bible. And to get our head around it, what we're going to do is look at some Bible stories and see what similarities there are and what differences there are. So what's the story of Elizabeth? Remember that from the New Testament?
Yeah, so from the New Testament, so from what I can remember with my study, Elizabeth is a barren woman, wife of Zechariah, and, you know, clearly of a mature age.
Yeah.
And was never going to have children. That was her vision. She accepted that. However, clearly there is a moment within the Bible where she was going to have a baby.
Yeah. That's right. So basically, Elizabeth is old and she's barren, which means she can't have children, which means she's at the bottom of society.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, there's no old age pensions. So who's going to look after Zechariah and Elizabeth when they're old?
Yeah. Well, nobody. I mean, there was nobody there, isn't it? They didn't have children of their own. They were, you know, spending any savings or at least benefiting from whatever trade they were in at the time. And of course, you're right, you know, they were the bottom of society. They didn't have a penny to rub together.
They were people who were shamed, that's the thing.
Wow.
So basically, the story is Elizabeth has a baby who then becomes with then John the Baptist.
And John the Baptist is quite central to the New Testament. I mean, he paves the way of Jesus's path. He is the kind of messenger and has quite an important process during Jesus's life. So
yeah,
a barren, bottom of society woman and partnership with husband and wife actually produces a monumental character.
That's it. Yeah, precisely. So then we have the other story, which isn't quite as well known, is the story of Hannah.
Right. Okay, I don't know Hannah too well. Tell us about Hannah's story.
Hannah is from the Old Testament, from the first book of Samuel.
Okay. Right?
And Hannah is really upset because she can't have children.
Okay, so similarities there.
Right. And basically she goes to the temple and she prays that she will be able to have a child, right?
Okay.
Okay. And what happens is she has a child who is then, she calls Samuel, which means God's gift.
Okay, and right. Quite poignantly, that's the right name, I think, isn't it? You pray and you receive, and that's fantastic.
That's it. So, and Hannah sings a song when she becomes pregnant in celebration of it.
Okay.
And Hannah's song is, "My heart rejoices in the Lord my horn is lifted high, my mouth boasts over my enemies, for I have delighted in my deliverance." But Elizabeth, or Mary's song,
okay,
Mary goes to visit Elizabeth.
Sorry. Yeah, and so Mary and Elizabeth are related, aren't they?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, cousins,
and of course, you know, this is where Elizabeth feeds into the Christmas story.
That's it, yeah. So Mary, when she receives the vision from the angel Gabriel, she's told by the angel Gabriel that her cousin Elizabeth is pregnant.
Okay.
So she goes to see Elizabeth.
And there's a great bit in the Bible, isn't there, that where, you know, there was this whole idea that they were going to tell each other that they were expecting a baby, but they both knew.
That's right. That's exactly it. So when they both know they're expecting babies, they sing a song. Okay, and I always like to think it's called Mary's Song, but I like to think of them singing it together.
Okay.
So remember, Hannah's song is, "My heart rejoices in the Lord. In the Lord, my horn is lifted high. My mouth boasts over my enemies, for I delight in your deliverance." And Mary's song is, "My soul glorifies the Lord, and my spirit rejoices in God, my Saviour, for he has been mindful of his humble servant. From now on, all generations will call me blessed."
Wow.
So the weird thing is that both songs say exactly the same thing in different ways.
And chronologically, it was hundreds of years between them.
Exactly. That's right. And because actually Hannah's story, Elizabeth's story, Mary's story, and even as well, what's the story of Sarah, Abraham's missus?
Okay, yeah. So Sarah and Abraham, of course, very similar story.
Yeah. Because Sarah is barren, she can't have children.
Yes.
And God promises Abraham to make him the father of many nations.
Yep.
And Sarah laughs, and then she has to call her son Isaac, which means...
to laugh, that's right. That's right,
to laugh.
Yeah.
So,
yes.
So what we see in the story of the Bible, all three of those characters and many, many, many more, are people who are at the bottom of the society, who God takes the initiative to, God goes to visit, right?
Yeah.
Or God goes to interact with, and they are brought up out of the bottom and redeemed.
So it's another countless argument and an example of where people do feel that God will only touch the rich people. And in fact, around that time, people would feel that if they were worthy of money and property, that God would touch them. But actually, countless arguments, countless examples of where actually, as a Christian, our focus should be more, quite rightly, on not those people, on the people that do struggle in life, because they're the ones that benefit the most.
Yeah, and God always comes to... My joke is God always goes to the wrong sort of people, because the people who we think he would go and interact with, he doesn't. He always goes to like the Hannahs or the Elizabeths or the Sarahs, and he always makes these promises which are way over the top, like to Abraham and Sarah.
Yeah.
He says, you know, "I'll make you a father of many nations," and he's like, "Well, my wife can't have kids."
Yeah.
So that's those guys.
So there's a story there. There's a story that's flowing through that. That isn't just about God going around making barren women have children, but it's about touching the people who you would not normally look at or perceive to be worthy to be touched by our God, to show them that actually they are worthy. They have a place in society, no matter where you come from, no matter what background.
Exactly. It's all to do with making the point that God is for everybody.
Okay.
So did
the story touch any men within the story? Is there anybody that are the blokes within the story?
Well, I'm PC, you see, so I'm starting with those guys. There's a lot of women in the Bible, So we'll think of some blokes. So King David.
Okay.
Right, King David.
Big character.
Yeah, King David is more written about King David in the Bible than anybody else.
Yeah.
Right, he's one of the central figures in the Bible. Now, his call is that he's the son of a bloke called Jesse, and Samuel, you remember him?
Yeah.
Right. He goes down, Samuel, Hannah's son, Samuel, goes down to Bethlehem and goes to see Jesse and says, "One of your sons I will anoint as king," right?
Right, okay.
So Jesse gets his sons out. He starts with the eldest, who is seen as the most important.
Yeah, the rightful heir to the throne of the family.
That's right.
Yeah.
And he passes, and Samuel says, "It's not him." So he brings out all his other sons, and he goes, "Not him, not him, not him, not him." Huh. And then Samuel says to Jesse, "Well, do you have any other sons? Because I know I have to make one of your sons king." And Jesse says, "Well, I do have one other son, but he's like the little one. He's the youngest.
Okay.
He's out in the fields looking after the sheep.
The worker.
the guy who was at the bottom.
The little scrope of the family.
That's it, the runt of the litter.
The runt of the litter out on the farm. Of course, I guess it wasn't brought to the group of brothers because they thought he wasn't worthy.
That's right, it wasn't even worth bringing him in from looking after the sheep.
He's just a farmer.
It definitely wouldn't be him because he's the shepherd guy, right? So definitely not him. Have him out there. And then he is anointed as the king, and then he goes and kills Goliath and all the other things that David does, good and bad. But he then is brought up as the king. So rather than the king being the most powerful, the most worthy, the strongest, physically strongest person, he is the weakest person and the person at the bottom of society.
Wow.
Now, Aaron.
So the story continues.
So if we think about David there,
yeah,
that should remind us a little bit about Jesus.
Yes.
Where Jesus is the guy at the bottom of society.
Well, yeah. I mean, he was born as a refugee. He spent 2 years on the run.
Yeah.
I mean, he had the most wanted posters against him. You know, let's be honest, he went into hiding. I mean, he must have lived such a difficult first 2 years in life, and we know the terrible twos are bad enough, but Jesus as a two-year-old, as a refugee, must have been difficult for Mary and Joseph. But in society, he would have just been seen as, again, the lowest of the low.
Yeah, someone at the bottom.
Yeah.
And in his death as well, he is the weakest guy. He's not the guy who is the strongest with the army who's going to bash people. Yeah. He's in our weakness is our strength. So that's David. And then we have other blokes from the Bible. Moses goes out and he sees a burning bush, and God speaks to him in the bush and says, go now and set my people free. So Moses is the guy who leads the Israelite people out of slavery in Egypt into the promised land. Okay,
because times were difficult then, weren't they? You know, life was really hard, and this Moses character was going to come along, and quite rightly so, to bring out the goodness in people and to take them away from that very dark place.
Exactly, but Moses had a stutter.
Right.
He doesn't have a stutter in the Ten Commandments film with Charlton Heston.
Okay,
he did have a stutter, right?
The Ten Commandments don't feature any stutters.
No. So my joke is in heaven, there's a big queue of people waiting to find Moses, you know. But it's Charlton Heston saying, "No, it's not me. That's Moses over there," you know. So he's got a stutter. Okay. So he says to God, "I can't go to release the people of Israel because I've got a stutter.
Yeah.
Nobody will listen to me.
Yeah.
I'm not going."
There was no disability legislation back then. You know, if you had something wrong with you, there was something wrong with you.
And that was it.
Yeah, that was it. Your cards were marked.
So even though Moses was brought up as a prince, he had become the bottom of society in the sense that he had this stutter. He couldn't do it, right?
Yeah.
But also as well, Moses says, no, I ain't going to go. And has to be persuaded by God to go.
Okay.
And it's the same because he doesn't...
Risky business, isn't it? Because there are stories in the Bible where people have either laughed or questioned the God and have not ended up particularly well for a period of time. In fact, you know, there is a character that lost his voice for a period of time.
Yeah, exactly.
So Zechariah followed the silence period for a while. But so Moses needed to be actively persuaded by God to feel that he could deliver this word.
That's right. See, Zechariah said no as well.
Yeah.
So so Isaiah is the other one. He had a vision and said, go and speak to my people. And he said, I can't speak to your people, God, because I'm not worthy.
Okay.
And God said, I will redeem you. And then in the vision, he puts a red hot coal on his mouth to show that he has taken away all his sin and all his badness, and he can be the prophet.
Okay.
So then he says yes.
Yeah.
Jeremiah, God calls Jeremiah, and he says to him, go and be my prophet to the people of Israel. And Jeremiah says, no, I'm too young and I'm too thick and I can't go. Don't ask me to do that. I can't do it because I'm too young.
It's just a prime example, isn't there, of society suppressing the lowest of the low. You know, they will never feel that they could, no matter how qualified or underqualified they are, they never felt that they could break that mould. But here was a vision, here was the word of God telling them that you can.
and I will be with you.
Yeah.
But because they're frightened, because it's all too much, they say no. And finally, in this just series of examples, we have St. Peter. He's called by Jesus on his boat, right?
Okay, yeah.
And Jesus asks him to throw down the nets on one side, and Peter goes, "Oh, I've been out all night and I haven't caught any fish, mate."
Yeah, yeah. Peter was an experienced fisherman. You know, he had a little franchise, he had a business going on, didn't he? He had people to work for him. Yeah. And you know.
So he was just like, "Who's this bloke telling me to do that?" So he does it anyway, and he catches so many fish. And then when he sees the miracle, he says to Jesus, "Go away from me, for I am a sinful man." So in other words, don't ask me to follow you, because I'm not good enough.
Yeah, okay.
So we see there, that's not lots of different stories. That's actually one story, which is very similar to the Sarah, Hannah, Elizabeth story, which is about God coming, seeking people out and rescuing them.
Yeah.
Because who they are, not even in spite of, because who they are.
Yeah.
And the people's response is to say, "Whoa, I'm not good enough."
Yeah.
But then changing their mind. So, in a way, that speaks of the very original story in the Bible, the first one of Adam and Eve, where they reject God because we have free will.
Yeah.
And they choose to live against what he's called them to be, right? But God doesn't leave them expelled, as God doesn't leave us expelled. He then calls us back. So even though we go away, Adam and Eve.
Well, they were banished from from quite literally Eden. I mean, they had everything, didn't they? The first man and woman on earth, they were given such responsibility, weren't they? They were given not just the garden, but the creatures. They were commanded to look after them.
Mm.
And they had everything that God felt that they needed. But of course, there was a point, there was a moment where temptation, the whispers, the snake at the serpent, that said that they could have more.
Yeah, it's to do with this idea that, did God really say that? Mm. I always remember that bit. Yeah. Did he really say that?
Yeah.
Now, if you do eat the fruit, then you can be like God, because then you'll know good and evil.
Yeah.
Now, we'll maybe do a proper episode on that whole story, because that's fascinating.
It's a big story. It's a deep story, isn't it?
A deep story, that.
Very symbolic.
Yeah, but what the rest of the Bible is about, really, past Genesis chapter 11, because the first 11 chapters of Genesis is basically the Adam and Eve story about human beings messing up and basically doing terrible things to each other.
Yes.
But once we get past that point, we get to Sarah and Abraham.
Yep.
And that's the beginning of the rest of the story, which is all about God redeeming us and going to those people at the bottom and lifting them up, no matter who they are. So that's the essence of the Bible, is that we rebel and God is infinitely patient, so always calls us back to himself, no matter where we go. My Old Testament lecturer said that if you wanted to sum up the Old Testament in a sentence, it would be, "Nevertheless, I love you."
Mm.
So the story of the Bible is people running away from God, but then God seeking them out, pulling them up, and redeeming them.
Astonishing. It's amazing, isn't it? That's the one, yeah. Really amazing, isn't it? And even now, people who are confused about Christianity, they always feel that Christianity is only for the rich, it's only for the people that are prim and proper and go on Sunday mornings to church, when actually it doesn't take much to scratch the surface, even within our own parish of Yate, where we've got some seriously vulnerable people within our community that we, every single day, you within your team, within the parish of Yate, actively support. And it isn't about feeding Mr. Dyson, who lives just up the road from us all in the eight, making sure that he's looked after. It's about looking after the most vulnerable. And those vulnerable people do grow up to be empowered to not only find a job for themselves, but could even grow up and grow within the church.
Yeah, and that's what it's about, really, is the characters in the Bible are ordinary people just like us, and in living the Christian life, what we actually do is we become part of the story of the Bible itself.
Mm.
So, in a sense, say, in my last parish, we had Christians Against Poverty Job Club.
Okay, yeah.
And what we did there was we took people at the bottom of society, sought them out, looked after them, and through encouragement and support, got them to the place where they could re-enter employment.
Yes.
So what we're doing there is we're putting into practice, or embodying, the story of Hannah, Sarah, Elizabeth, Peter, Jeremiah. We're making the Bible real,
yeah,
in what we do every day, and that's essentially what the story of the Bible isn't about something that happened a long time ago. It's actually our story today,
yeah,
which we retell through our actions.
And I think it's really important, if you're gonna look to the Bible and look for the story, and to give it some context. Everything you read in that Bible is about the overarching story that we've just summarised.
Mm.
And I think it's important. And of course, you can't read it from front to back. That's not how it works. We've talked about how it is a library within a bound. But I mean, it's important. I mean, and there are parts of the Bible that calls us all. I mean, have you heard that before?
Yeah. Well, one of the what happened to me was when I was a student in Birmingham, I started saying the daily office, which was my greatest mistake from a career point of view. And so one of the first reading I read was the beginning of Lent. I was just going to do it for Lent. Was the call of Jeremiah.
Okay.
Right. And the call of Jeremiah is, as we said, God calls Jeremiah, and Jeremiah says, no, I can't be a prophet because I'm too young and I'm too stupid and nobody will listen to me. And around that time, I was thinking in the back of my mind about priesthood and being a priest and things. But I thought it was a stupid idea because I was too young.
Okay.
I was too stupid and nobody would listen to me. And so I shut the book. And yeah. I thought, I've had enough of this. Leave it. But for a good number of years, that passage from the call of Jeremiah, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you and I anointed you to go and bring good news to my people. All of that kept on coming back to me all the time.
Mm.
And when I went for the interviews for the priesthood, they said, you know, why are you here? And I said, well, there's this bit in the beginning of Jeremiah, I said, and it keeps on speaking to me about calling. And, you know, I don't know what to do with it because I think I'm too young and too stupid and nobody will listen. So that's why I shouldn't be a priest. But this passage keeps on coming back. And they went, what passage is that? I said, well, this bit from Jeremiah. And they all laughed. The people who were interviewing me.
Yeah.
And I thought, you, what's the matter with it?
It wasn't even a joke.
I was like, don't laugh at me. Yeah. I'm you, you know.
Yeah.
So I told this story about four or five times. You have to go to all these different people.
Yes.
And all of them laughed, right?
Okay.
And I thought, why is this funny? What's the matter with it? And I remember when I was, so they wrote, that when you're accepted for training for the priesthood, they write this little report, and it said in it, just like Jeremiah, we believe God is called Howell to the priesthood or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, right, fair enough. But when I was ordained a priest,
yep,
I was sat there like that feeling nervous. And they said, now we'll have the first reading. So woman gets up now and reads the first reading. She says, a reading from the prophet Jeremiah. Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you, blah, blah, blah.
Wow.
Was the thing that called me,
yeah,
and I didn't realise until then, is the set reading for the ordination of priests, which is why they all laugh.
Astonishing. That is astonishing.
I was not happy with God about that.
No,
I was
like, no.
So I think
it's the told you so moment.
It was, yeah. It was just like, I've got your moment.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that's the thing, is the story of the Bible, of finding those unexpected people, and redeeming them, and loving people because they are who they are, the children of God, in spite of what we do sometimes, and redeeming us. That is, and that's not just the story of the Bible, that's the story of who we are today.
We hope you've enjoyed this week's episode.
And don't forget, you can get in contact with us on Facebook and on Twitter.
And we're also find us on Instagram.
Oh, yes, Instagram, yes. And on our website, which is yateparish.org. Don't forget, this is an interactive show, so we really value your comments. So put your comments on SoundCloud or any other platform that you're listening to, and we'll get back to you.